Rambam, in his 10 chapters on Hilchos Tshuva, as I say, we're going to go through 1 through 4, a little bit of the others. You can read it for yourselves. It's a good thing to do Chazorah on, to go over before Yom Kippur. In the later chapters of Hilchos Tshuva, he gets more philosophical. He talks about what is Olam Haba, because he's going to mention Olam Haba. And because he talks about Olam Haba, he says you have to know what is Olam Haba, what isn't Olam Haba, what are the mitzvahs of loving God, of connecting with God, of having awe for God. And we're not going to get into that because we don't have time. We could just do that for the whole year. It would be lovely. But his first four chapters really are a systematic approach to tshuva. Chapter 1 we did last week. Chapter 1 starts with what he calls kapara. He didn't call it kapara. It comes from the Chumash, the word kapara, which, and again, I don't like these very Catholic-sounding words like repentance and atonement and sin, etc. Kapara, do you remember what we said this means? The sort of root, the underlying root of it? It means to clean. It means to cleanse. He talks about the vessels that we use, the certain things we used in the temple to clean off the blood from certain things were called Kippurei Zahav. And therefore, Yom Kippurim is the day of Kapara. And Kapara, he says, is getting you clean of the thing that went wrong. It's just cleaning up the mess. Meaning, the first stage of tshuva, he says, is just accepting that you made a mess. You're not yet trying to change to be a better person. You're not trying to change the whole system within your mind. We're going to get there today. But chapter 1 was Kapara. And therefore, he said, the first thing you've got to do if you want to do tshuva is you've got to do vidui. And he sets out vidui. Vidui is very technical. Vidui means you actually, again, very Catholic sounding, confess. But levadot, what's vadai mean in Hebrew? Vadai?
Certain.
Clear, definitely. It means you clarify. You clarify, you set out, these are the things that I've been doing. I own them. And we have a whole system, Ashamnu, Bagadnu, Gazalnu. We just have this alphabet thing, which you don't have to say all of that exactly how that is, but that's set out for you so you'll, in case there's anything you'd forgotten about, you'll realize that, oh yeah, I did a bit of that, and I did a bit of that, and I did a bit of that. Now, at this stage, says the Rambam, you have not yet changed. All you have to do for vidui is, and you have to mean it, is you have to say, I own these things, I did them. I feel bad that I did them. And I resolve I don't want to do them again. Okay? The classic three stages of what people call about tshuva, which is I own it, I feel bad that I did it, and I don't want to do it again. Now, at this point, is there any real hope that you won't do it again? Well, maybe yes, but maybe not. Maybe it's more of I want to not do it again. But at the moment, I don't know how I'm going to do that because I really need it. I mean, whatever it is, I still need it. I still want it. I'd love not to want it. I really feel bad about it. Again, you don't feel sorry. You don't feel regret. You feel guilty. There's a difference between feeling guilty and feeling sorry. I feel bad that this is what I did, but what can I do? I need this kind of thing, but I did it. I own it. I regret it. I feel bad about it, and I don't want to do it anymore, but maybe I'll end up doing it. Okay? But you really mean that you don't want to do it anymore. And he goes through and he says that all process of tshuva need this system. And he says not just tshuva for Yom Kippur. He says that Yom Kippur has a special power, which it cleans more things than everybody. Think of it like stains. You've made a stain. You've made a mess. So your tshuva, your vidu and your tshuva cleans a certain amount. Says Yom Kippur is a cleansing, kind of heavy duty cleaner. That'll clean up more. And then there's Yisurin. This is where we finished off last week. There's things, there's bad things that happen to us, suffering that happens to us through our lives. That should also be a kapara. We said that's the minag of, you know, people when something goes wrong and they drop something and they lose their phone, they drop it in the bath and they say, oh, it should be a kapara. Yeah? That's where they're coming from. That this should be the thing that you're suffering that'll cleanse a little bit more of that. And he said, in the worst of all sins, which is Chilul Hashem, where a person just does something that brings all the Torah into disrepute, he says, the only thing that will really clean up your slate is just death itself. You need tshuva, and you need Yom Kippur, and you need suffering, and you need the death itself. It doesn't mean you're going to die right here and now. He's not saying that. It's saying that some things take a lot of cleaning up. But right now, it's just been talking about the cosmic mess. I gave a metaphor last week. Let's imagine that you were very clumsy. You knocked over a vase and you broke it all over the floor and it's made a mess. And you say, you know something, from now on, I'm going to be really, really careful and I'm going to take classes in mindfulness and I'm going to you know, practice walking in a way that doesn't trip over things. Beautiful. I'm never going to break another vase. Did you clean up this mess from this vase? No, but look, I resolved clean up the mess. First of all, own it, clean it up. Okay? That's number one. But that's very technical. You have not yet changed as a person. You don't even yet know how you're going to do that. And that's why he goes to chapter 2. So open chapter 2 now. This is the whole of Hilchot Teshuvah with English and in Hebrew. You can follow in either. The numbering, this is slightly confusing. There's two sets of numbering. There's the Aleph Bet Gimel. I'm on page 3 in this pack. There's the Aleph Bet Gimel down the side. And then you'll see little brackets every now and then with the Aleph Bet Gimel in brackets. That actually is what the English follows more than the other ones. But you can follow in Hebrew. It's not difficult. In Hebrew, we're going to read it quickly together. So I'm going to go through chapter 2 today. Happy to take questions. Having gone through... Yes, Sophia. Yes, of course. No, it's okay. No. Now is the time. Having gone through... No, there isn't another one. Sorry, you just have to show you. Can you take the one sheet that we have? You got that? Okay, fine. Well, we'll get more made. Don't worry about it. We'll get more made. Okay, so now he opens up chapter 2. And he says, this very tantalizing opening. Ezehi tshuva gemura. But what is tshuva gemura? What does gemura mean? Like real tshuva. Like complete tshuva. I mean, what I described for you in chapter 1 is very nice. You own it. It's like, you know, when the boss, like I said to you last week, you hand in a piece of substandard work and the boss just throws it back and he says, you want to be part of this firm? You can't give me work like this. You've got to, oh, yeah, boss, I'm going to get better. I don't know how, but I'm going to get better. Okay? But now, Ezehu Tshuva Gemura, how do you really make change? Zesh Shebali Yado Dava She'avabo. That's a case where you can have the same situation. Something happens to you that happened previously. The Evsheh B'yado La'asos. And you can still do this thing wrong. You are tempted. And you still have the ability to do it wrong. Uperish V'loi Asa. And you don't do it. You refrain. You pull back from doing it. Mipnei HaTshuva. Because you've managed to control it. You've managed to let go of that need to do it. Lo Miyira. Not because you're scared. But lo mikishlon koach, I mean you're scared, oh God's going to punish me. No, that's very childish tshuva. Or because then you really, really need it still, but you're just scared. No, you've realized that I'm not going to do this. Or mikishlon koach, and not because you're just too weak. Yeah, you used to be, you know, really tempted in sexual, inappropriate things. But now you're 96, so you're fine, you don't care anymore. I'm not saying 96-year-olds don't have any gates of horror, I'm sure they have some. But like, big deal, shkoyach, you know, that's nice. But it's not the real deal. So how does it work? Ketzad. Harish Shibal Ishabaveri. He gives the case of sexual temptation, which is, let's face it, probably the biggest drive that pushes people off the edge in the directions that they don't want. It's an enormous drive. It's very important. There's a very well-known Gemara that talks about the idea that they davened for the beginning of the Second Temple period for the Yetzer Hara, for the temptation of idolatry to be taken away, because it was just so corrosive of First Temple, you know, life. And their wish was granted, and it was taken away. Oh, amazing. So they said, look, while we're at it, while we're on a good roll, and you have to work out what this means in real terms, this midrashic idea. They said, let's daven for the temptation for sexuality, inappropriate sexuality to be taken away. Because you know how many lives this destroys? How many marriages, how many just lives it destroys? So they did, and it was taken away. But then the chickens wouldn't lay any eggs. And nothing, you know, no one got pregnant. Then they said, okay, this is not going to work. Ah, so we need it. You need to have the sexual drive in order to make the world turn round. It's very strong because it needs to be. I mean, let's face it. Who wants to produce babies? Who wants something which is bald, toothless, and doubly incontinent that stays up and cries all night long? I mean,
I'll take four.
There has to be something driving the need to create that kind of thing. Okay, but at the end of the day, we need that. And in fact, there's some very interesting analyses which I'm not going to learn with you. Around tshuva on the Jewish sexual ethic. Different cases that the Gemara brings of people, one of them who just basically was so addicted to prostitution that eventually he just kind of was so disgusted with himself, he just cried and he just died from the sheer just embarrassment and just feeling. And that was one level of tshuva. And there's a whole story, Rabbi Eleza ben Durdoya. Very famous. Again, annoying when rabbis say it's famous. It just means they know it. Sorry, I apologize. But it's one you need to learn. Then there's another account, a beautiful account of this man who wanted to go to the best prostitutes in the world, and he saved up and he found this woman who was the most, you know, reputation like no one else had, and he gets there and he pays the money, and she's got like a secretary that lets him in, and she's doing the waiting room, da-da-da. She says, you can come in now, and there's a whole story. You can read the story for yourself. In the end, these two people end up not only just not having that kind of base sexual relationship with each other, but they end up actually talking to each other. It's a very interesting story, and they get down from the bed and they sit on the floor and they say, well, like, who are you anyway and what's your name? And they end up actually getting married to each other. It's a whole very interesting story. He goes to yeshiva. She gives him... It's a beautiful, beautiful story. One of them is about how to deal with sexuality in a way that you dealt with it, but it just destroyed you. And the other one is how to deal with it in a way which actually works it into a life of, you know, legitimate sexual connection, which is beautiful, not for now, very tshuva-oriented. But that's why he uses this, because everybody, pretty much everybody who's healthy, feels this pull. Harishibal isha ba'aveira. He comes to a woman, he has a relationship with a woman, without, which is inappropriate. It's illicit on both their sides. Ula'achaz man nisyachidima. And then later on he finds he's together with her again. V'hu omid ba'avasay. And he still is as attracted to her. Again, if he's not attracted to women anymore, then like shkayach, you've just had your libido turned off. Like, you don't get any points for doing tshuva for that. No, he still has his attraction. He still feels the strength to be able to do it. He's still in the same situation, same environment, the same person. But he pulls back and he says, you know something? This is just not the right thing to do. I can control this. That is a real Baal Tshuva. Because it's not just that he stood up and said, vidui. Yeah, I own it and I did it and I'm regret. He's actually able, he's changed somehow his neural pathways. He's changed his actions. And that's why Shlomo said, Zechor et borecha, remember your creator, v'yemei b'churasecha, when you're still young, you can still do a good tshuva. Again, don't leave it till you're old. You can do it when you're young. And he says, v'im lo shav ela b'yemei siknusa. But of course, if you only do tshuva when you're very old, u'be'et she'ia shelo lasod ma shehaya oseh, in a time when you can no longer really do what you used to do, that's not really the best tshuva, but it's tshuva of some kind, meaning it's never too late. Even if you regret something in the past and you're not even in that situation anymore and you can't really do the best tshuva, you can do what you can do. Ubal tshuva hu, and that's considered to be a tshuva. The afilu ava kol yamav, even in an extreme case where a person did something wrong their whole life, and they only did tshuva on their deathbed, on the day of their death, and they died with that new realization, that new understanding. Again, not the best tshuva, because when he's on his deathbed or she's on her deathbed, she's probably not going to be able to really not do the things that she or he did before because she's not in that situation. But it works. Kol avonotav nimchalim, all their averas, all of their misdeeds can be wiped out, and he brings the psukim, etc., that prove that. I'm not going to read through every single pasuk. He brings lots of beautiful psukim. Now, it's important to understand that this is one of the reasons why we go to extreme lengths to extend people's lives, even if that extension is only very minimal, because in those minutes that they were given by you, they could change an entire spiritual reality. For example, on Shabbat, breaking Shabbat is on purpose is probably the most serious, one of the most serious things in terms of halachic consequences one can do. And yet, the halacha is, if a building fell down, a collapse, there was an earthquake on Shabbat, and we don't know if there's anybody there, and every time we take stones off, it's breaking Shabbat again and again and again. We don't know if there's anyone there. And even if there's someone there, we don't know if they're dead or alive. There's multiple levels of question. You must break Shabbos in order to try and find that person, even if what you're going to find is a dead body, because there's the slightest chance that you're going to find someone, and even if you find them and they've got like 3 minutes to live, if you break Shabbos, you must break Shabbos to give them those 3 minutes. You have to, because those 3 minutes can be life transformational. You never know, and you never know, someone could be in a vegetative state. You don't know what's going on in their head. You don't know what they can see. You don't know what they can hear. So now, it doesn't mean that we always do everything we can to intervene to extend life. That doesn't mean that. And there are situations when, quotes and quotes, you know, the machine can be unplugged. It doesn't work like that these days, but whatever. I'm not getting into that whole thing now. But in principle, one of the reasons we do that is because a person can really achieve a sense of focus and calm even in those last few minutes. Fine. Now, Gimel. Umahi a tshuva. Okay, so what is this kind of tshuva? We're not talking about the chapter one tshuva, which is kapara, which is, I just need to clean up the mess and just say, I'm not going to do it. No, this is a real deal. This is, we're going to talk about mechila, really getting real forgiveness. Hu sheyazov hachayte cheto. Now we have a new category. It's not just the standard three. I feel bad. I own it. I feel bad. I don't want to do it again. No, no. It's yazov achotzei chetzer. You have to actually be able to let go. You have to have a plan, something that's going to get you there. The yisirenu memachshavto. You have to change your mind. You have to change your neural pathways. Again, it's not that you don't want to do that anymore. Of course, you still want to do that. That's the whole point. But you've managed to develop the self-control to be an adult to yourself. I sat next to a psychologist at a wedding the other night, which is always fun to sit next to a psychologist anytime, especially at a wedding when you're looking for things to talk about. And he said, I asked him what kind of psychology he does, and he said he works with people with trauma, and the methodology he uses is that there's a childish reaction in all of us to certain things, but we're generally adults, and he has to help people understand that they need to adult themselves. They need to be an adult to themselves. There's an element of them which is still behaving childishly, and that bit of them which is an adult has to be able to gain control over that bit of them which is a child and work out how to deal with that. It was very interesting. So that's why he won't work with people under 25, because their whole essence is childish. There's no adult there, or there's not enough adult there to bring the adult out. To, you know, it's okay, he's making exceptions, he said he worked with a 20-year-old, he said, but it's like, you need to be old enough to deal with it, to be a real, whatever. I'm not saying if you're under 25, you're not an adult, you can be, etc. But he says, you need to be able to change that mind, your pathway in your mind. The yigmor beliboy, and you can fix in your mind, shelo yaseh od, not just I want to do it, but I actually know I'm going to be able to do it. You may fall back again later. It's not that you'll definitely be like this forever, but that you're like this right now. Shneema yazov rasha darko. It says in the pasuk you have to abandon the ways that you do wrong. Ish avin machshavata and the sins of one's mind, meaning it has to be a mind change. Ki yitnachem al shaavah. You really feel a sense of genuine sorrow over the past. Shneema, and he brings the pasuk, etc. The yaid, third line of Gimel. The yaid alav yodei talumot. And at this moment, God can say about you right here, right now, shelo yashuv lezeh achet la'olam, that you will not go back to this. Where you are right now, you can resist it. You've gained that control. Now again, you may regress in the future. And one of the reasons why we read on Rosh Hashanah morning the parsha of Yishmael is because when Yishmael was crying, and because Hagar had abandoned him, and the angels kind of came and God saved him, there's a very interesting midrash. When God saved him, and the angelic host said, how can you save this Ishmael? Look what damage he's going to do in the future to the world and to the Jewish people. And God replies, right now, right where he is right now, he's an innocent young man who needs to be saved. What he will be in the future is irrelevant. That's why we read on Rosh Hashanah, because we want to be able to say, if we've done the work right now, don't worry about what's going to be in 5 years or 2 years or even in 5 months. I've done the genuine work right now. It's not just like I said it, but I've done genuine work. So, and that's why this is different from what came before. But then, at the end of three, v'tzarech lehid vadot misfatav, and you have to say the vidui, because that's still part of it. V'loima inyanot elu shigam abedib. And you have to say out loud. You have to talk to yourself. You can't just think. You have to talk. When you say something, it's more real, what you've said in your mind. Fine. Dalet. V'kol ha-mitzveh b'dvarim. But if you fake it, if you're doing this vidui and you're clapping on your chest and it's not real, it's just pretend. And again, what do I mean not real? We're going to see this next time. There are things that all of us realize that we're just not going to be able to change right now. And we still do vidui on them and we know that they're not going to improve right now. There are other things that we've managed to gain control over. As long as one has a long-term plan as to how to deal with the things one can't deal with now, then it is real. Not real, I mean, I'm just not taking it seriously. I'm just doing this kind of thing, and I'm not even thinking, meaning if you take it seriously, there'll be lots of different things you're thinking about. You're going to turn around to God and you'll say, these are the things I can change now. These are the things that I'm doing great. Rav Soloveitchik said, vidui also includes the things that you did right last year. Vidui means clarification. That's why it's not confession. Confession is a bad word. There's a mitzvah, nothing to do with what we're talking about here, called vidui ma'aser. You ever heard of vidui ma'aser? You have to do vidui on the tithes that you're given. The farmer, twice in every 7 year cycle, stands up and says this formula, where it's in next week's parsha, where he says, I've given all the stuff to the Kohen, I've given all the stuff to the Levi, I've given all the stuff to the poor, I've done everything I was meant to do. Now please God give us a bracha because I've done my best. Says Rabbi Soloveitchik, that's called vidui as well. And that's all the things you did right. So if you're taking it seriously, it's this stuff I did wrong and I can change. This stuff I did right and I'm Baruch Hashem and I'm really proud of myself. And this stuff I would love to be able to change and I have a plan as to how I'm going to change. It's just not going to happen right now. Okay, that's sort of taking it seriously. It says, but if you just make think you're going to fake it, the Lord Gamal Balibul Azov, Dalet's on the first line, Harizedom el Toivel v'sheretz b'yado. It's a metaphor that the rabbis give. Someone who goes to the mikveh to become pure, but they're holding the dead lizard that made them impure. Mm-hmm. Meaning somebody who picks up a dead lizard becomes impure for the day. Tameh for the day. Okay, so he can go to the mikveh, and when the sun sets, he or she will be good to go again. But if you walk into the mikveh with the lizard in your hand, then the mikveh does nothing. It doesn't work. You're just in denial. You can't do that. You can't still go into the mikveh of tshuva with the thing right there. Actually, yashlich hasheretz, he says, just let it go. This metaphor, just open your hand and drop the sheretz, and then you could do it. It's very hard to do that. Do you know what a monkey trap is? You can Google this. If you're very squeamish and you don't like bad things happening to animals, then don't Google this. Mm-hmm. But the way they trap monkeys in places where they need to trap monkeys, even for good reasons, whatever they need to trap monkeys, is they do it like this. So you go to a monkey, and you put down a banana, okay? So the monkey comes and takes a banana. If you just put down a banana on the floor, so the minute you walk up, the monkey just runs away with a banana. Okay, that won't work. So what you do is you put the banana inside a jug, and there's a narrow opening in the jug, okay? And the monkey puts his hand in, or her hand in, let's not be sexist, okay? And puts their hand in, and they grab the banana. But they can't get the banana out, because the banana is too big for the hole. But the hand can come straight out. It's not trapped at all. All they need to do is just drop the banana, slip the hand out, and run away. It's not trapped in any way. It only is a problem if you hold the banana. And you can see this, and the monkey grabs the banana, and it won't let go. And it sees the hunter walking towards it, and you can see it in distress, but it won't let go of the banana. And it holds the banana right until the moment, including the moment where the net goes over its head. It just needed to just drop the banana and run.
It's literally what happened to Curious George. It's exactly the first book.
Yes.
It's a monkey trap. So the Rambam says, just let the banana go. That's just let it go?
Yeah,
it's very hard to let it go. The Chenu Omer, then he brings the various psukim, you have to let it go. Hey, so how am I going to get myself into the mindset of doing that? Meaning this is not just a verbal, intellectual thing. The first chapter isn't, this is emotional. I have to use all of the tools at my disposal to get myself in the right mood for this. And it's not easy. That's why we have Elul, you know, and Shofar and all this process to kind of, because you can't just walk into Yom Kippur cold and say, okay, it's Yom Kippur today. You need to build up to it. So he says like this, hey, midarchei hatshuva. Here are ways, here are methodologies, here are approaches that you can use to try and do this. And he's not saying you have to do all of these things. He's saying, here's a list. This might help you. Liot hashav so'ek tamid lifnei Hashem. Some people like screaming and crying. You know, some people go to the forest and, you know, on their own and cry, I don't know, tati, tati, or Hashem, Hashem, or whatever. I don't know what they do. Some people feel mega ridiculous doing that. I'm English. I don't think you'd catch me doing that. Unless I had a lot to drink. Okay, fine. So some people do that. Fine. But bechi u'tachnunim, some people cry immensely and beg and plead. Or say tzedakah. Some people give tzedakah. Okay? There's nothing wrong with giving stock. Giving stock is great. Kifi kocho, according to what they can do. Giving stock is good for you. It makes you do small acts of kindness that impress on you the value of giving and the dopamine rush that you get when you give to other people. That's why the Rambam says, classically, if you have $1,000 and you have a choice between giving $1 to 1,000 people or $1,000 to one person, it's way better to give $1 to 1,000 people, because then you give 1,000 times and it'll have a massive impact on you. That's not to say it's not good sometimes to give a large amount of stock to someone who it'll be life-changing for. There's a lot to be said for that too. But in terms of your impact on you, every time you give, one of my teachers, Rabbi Nathan Lopez Cordozo, he said once he met two Vietnam vets in a hotel lobby. It must have been a long time ago, because I'm not even sure there are so many Vietnam veterans still around. I mean, there are probably a few. They said, are you a rabbi? He goes, yeah. Like, what can I help you with? He goes, well, we're not Jewish, but can we speak to you anyway? So he says, yeah, of course you can. You can speak to us. Speak to me. No. He says, well, look, we're Vietnam veterans. And we just, like, we had to do so many awful things in the army. We had to kill so many people in so many ways. At first, it was just life-destroying to do that, but we became so immune to it, so blasé about it, so completely switched off about it, we've entirely lost our sensitivity to, you know, empathize or help other people. What can we do? So he says, okay, you know, I'm not a therapist, I'm a rabbi, so there's a lot of help you people can get, but one of the things you can do is do very small acts of kindness for people as much as you can, and that itself will impress on you the worth of giving to other people. So that's why we give tzedakah. We're not trying to bribe God, you know, during the 10 days of repentance. Oh, look, here's some tzedakah, please forgive me. That's just ridiculous. That's childish. We're saying, look, I want to do something that gives me the kind of, builds a neural pathway to do this. Because if I give, that makes a difference. Yeah, one of the ways you can get to like people better is by giving to them. Most people like their children more than their parents. That's just normal, okay? Even though all they ever do for their children is give to them. And all they ever do for their parents is receive from them. You would have thought, well, I prefer the people that give me than the people who take from me. But it's not like that. You feel a closer bond to the people you give to than the people you take from. You actually start resenting the fact that you're taking from them all the time. And then it gets a lot of baggage and it becomes difficult and parents just become all that. People don't have the same issues with their children as they do with their parents. The children have the issues with them. But okay, that's a different question. Okay, fine. So you've got to give tzedakah if that works for you. Mitrachek harbe min adava shechatzabo. Get yourself away from the thing that causes you the problems. Meaning if you're serious about it, you need to take some real steps. If you have an addiction, you have to work out what to do to distance yourself from the addiction. I'm not a therapist, I'm not going to give you therapy. But people have all sorts of different things that they can't resist. You have to try and find some way of actually achieving that. Yes?
And if you get away from the thing, then you're not going to be able to be like, feel the whole shua because you have to have...
Correct. Care. Correct. So, in a sense, it's a little bit ironic in the sense that you only really know if you succeeded if you are in that situation and you resisted. But what sense does it make to put yourself into that situation and just basically invite your own, you know, downfall? Because it's just not sensible. You know, this guy found himself together with this woman again and it turned out he was able to do it. But if he's going to hang out with her every day, all day, then what's going to be? Of course they're going to fall into the same patterns of behavior that they did before. So he says, distance yourself from what it is that causes you the problem, as much as you can. Meshane Shma, he says, some people change their names. Again, what's that magic? Oh, I changed my name, I'm just not that person. Somehow you feel to yourself, actually, this is a new beginning. This is a new beginning. Of course I've not just forgotten who I was, but there's a new me. Koloma, as if to say, Sha'ani Acher, I'm a different person. I'm not the same person. Yeah, they're not trying to fool anybody. And they shouldn't be trying to fool themselves, but if this is part of what it takes to rebuild your personality, then fine. For some people, it might be a terrible thing to change their name. They might feel that they just, you know, not honest to themselves and it's not them anymore. This is with Bali Tshuva, in the modern sense of Bali Tshuva, this is sometimes a question, you know? When you walk into somebody called Kylie, and then you walk out called Sarah Rachelay and Nechama, you know, whatever. No, nothing with Sarah Nechama, you know, whatever. But like, you know, for some people that's amazing. It's like a whole new start. For some people it's like, I don't know, I just don't feel I'm the same person anymore and I don't like that, you know. It depends. I have this a lot, by the way, because like my whole life, in England, you're going to see some of my neuroses right now. In England, all the Anthony is a very Jewish name, okay? It's, you know, all the Antonys I grew up with were all Jewish. In America, Anthony is a super non-Jewish name. Yeah. It's like an Italian name. Yeah. It's a bit like being called Chris, you know? Okay? So I'm faced with this real dilemma. On the one hand, it really traumatizes Americans sometimes, especially in the more, you know, yeshiva circles, when they need to put my name on a poster. They don't put my name on a poster. What? They'll write Rabbi A. Manning. Yeah. They can't bring themselves to do it, you know? So on the one hand, I could just make life easy for people. I call myself Abraham. My name is Abraham. My two dads are says Abraham. You know, it's fine. I like the name Abraham. It's a beautiful name. It's my grandfather's name. I was named after him. And in Israel, anyway, Anthony, nobody even pronounced Anthony. The first 3 or 4 years that I was here, they called me Anatoly. They thought I was from Moscow. Okay. Yeah, you know. So I just went to Avraham. It's fine. Mm-hmm. But now, if I change from Anthony to Avraham, it's like everyone's going to go, oh,
yeah.
He's finally from down. You know, like it's kind of. So I just. So changing your name is a really big thing. But that because it's such a big thing, it can be a really big thing in a positive way. Yes. And Tiddy, you had a question.
What's
yeah.
The name of your book?
On my book, Anthony, I insisted because I felt I would be selling myself out, and to some degree selling out my students as well, mm-hmm. if I change my name at this stage. Mm-hmm. I feel it would be like almost like a betrayal on a certain level. I know that's really a silly thing to say, mm-hmm. but I know I insisted on it.
If you really want to commit, you could go the other way and be Chris.
Look, yeah, I could. Change my... Yeah. I like it, Rachel. There's good news and there's bad news. The good news is I finally changed my name.
Yeah.
The bad news is... You know, Sibia, yes.
Applying this situation, for example, to someone who is having a hard time not being, let's say, for example, Mahalal Shabbos, in the more minor ways, such as maybe they are not so careful with mukta items or, you know, taking the, you know, good from the bad, things like that. Like, how does one distance themselves from that? Like, how does it get...
You have to decide why you're not doing it properly.
Right.
For some people, they're not doing it properly just because they just haven't learned the halachas properly,
right.
and they're just like, don't tell me, I don't want to know. But they're basically people who are committed to halacha, they're just, you know, just don't want... So for some of those people, the answer is to get a book on Hilchas Muksa and learn Hilchas Muksa really well, and then you'll be into it more, you'll get excited by it more, and then you'll be kind of a doctor. Some people, that works. Other people, it's not like that. Other people, it's, well, you should be focusing on other things right now, you can't be driving yourself crazy. Everybody's different. You have to work out what is your Yetzer Hara, why are you doing it? Are you doing it because you have an issue? Are you doing it because you're just lazy? Are you doing it because you're just ignorant and you just can't be bothered to learn, or you don't want to, you're worried about what people might tell you? You have to do a lot of self-analysis to work out what is the right way to fix it.
Right.
Sometimes it's just good old-fashioned Yetzer Hara. I can't be bothered. You know? It's not always like deeply baggage-ridden, but sometimes it is. Okay, he says also, we're still in Hay, yeah? Some people just start doing good deeds, doing masim tovim. There's a minhag, for example, during this 10 days of tshuva, that if you ate pas palta during the year, pas palta is bread which is baked by non-Jews commercially. Now that is kosher. I mean, if your next door neighbor bakes you a beautiful cake or a loaf, she's not Jewish, he's not Jewish, it's treif. You can't eat it. Even if it's made with totally kosher ingredients, it's not kosher. But if a commercial company bakes bread, which is kosher ingredients, you have to check it's kosher ingredients, obviously a lot of them are not, then you can eat that. But it's not ideal. But you can, and it's fine, and people do. During the Aseret Yemei Teshuva, people take on these chumras, and they say, I'm not going to eat pas palta, I'm only going to eat pas Yisrael. So why are they doing that? So people might say, well, that's so hypocritical. You're just trying to pretend to God for 10 days that you're a holy shmoly? Mm-hmm. And the answer is, no, that's not why you're doing it. You're doing things that you don't normally do to show yourself, I can do this too. It builds something in you. Again, if you think you're just bribing God through 10 days of extra frum behavior, then that's ridiculous. It's just childish. But if you're doing it because you say, I actually want to just lay down neural pathways and do this, then okay, you know, maybe that'll actually change you as a person. And finally, he says, "Ogale mi makaymai," and one of the best things to do is to leave the place you normally are. Because people have certain modes of behavior because they're in the place that they grew up or the place that they live with the friends that they have. And if they get themselves somewhere else, shinui makom, if you change your place, shinui mazal, it changes the way you see the world, you get yourself to Israel, you just move home. I've seen this so many times, by the way, with people who have been sort of stuck in a rut and all sorts of ways, and just a change to somewhere else can just open up new vistas. So he says these are not guaranteed to succeed, but these are methodologies. He says, I'm laying you out a list. These are things that you can do, and changing your places is good because then you have to start from scratch, you have to make an effort, etc., etc. Vav. V'shevach gadol l'shav sheyisvadi b'rabbi. And it's a wonderful thing for a person to actually tell other people what they're doing to make it real. The odia pesha amlahem, and to tell them what they did wrong and how they're trying to change. Now again, you have to judge this as to whether it's going to work for you or not. Umagale averu shebeino bein chaveru lacherim, and to tell other people, this is how I used to behave and I'm really trying to change this. And he say to them, Amnon chatati leploini va'asiti lokach v'kach. This is how I used to behave. This is how I used to talk. This is how I used to treat people. V'hari hayom shav v'nichem. And I realize now how terrible that was, and I'm not going to do that. V'kol amitgai v'einu modia. And if you're too proud to admit to other people what you did wrong, and the mechase pasha, but you just cover it up, ain't you masa gemura? That's not called being a real bal tshuva, because you're not making it real. It's very interesting. Obviously, it's going to traumatize you to tell something about what you did in the past, then you don't have to do that. But he's saying sometimes saying things to other people and being honest about it, that might help you a lot. And then he says, but madvar morim in zayin, when does this apply? Interpersonal things. But things that you do between you and God, you don't have to tell other people. That's no one else's business. And it's actually arrogant to do that. Meaning he's saying, it's one thing turning around to other people and saying, you know something, I used to be rude all the time to people, and I'm really trying to work on that, and I'm trying not to behave like that. I used to be like take grudges against people, whatever, in an honest way. That's fine if that helps. You know, people feel embarrassed, by the way, to say that. People feel embarrassed to say, I used to be emotionally abusive, but I'm not so much anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, the Rambam says, no, that's not actually embarrassing. It's more embarrassing to say, I used to break Shabbos all the time, and I used to eat treif all the time. He says, that's actually, you know, like, whose business is that? Mm-hmm. It's actually, we feel the opposite, no? Isn't it much easier to tell other people, I used to break Shabbos and now I keep Shabbos? As opposed to, I used to be emotionally abusive and manipulative, but now I'm trying. Yeah. And now I'm really working on that. Like, it's like. Yeah. But actually, he's saying it's more real if you share with other people the thing that's actually difficult, because then you end up. Again, I'm not telling you that this is the same for everybody. He's laying out here the methodologies as to the ways that people find that this helps, and therefore you need to build from this. Now. Chet, let's go. He's going to talk about Yom Kippur now. Yes, Sophia.
Sorry, just a quick question. That whole idea of changing your place to be kind of like changing the mazal, like, is that his concept, or like, does he bring that down from somewhere else?
No. That is in the Gemara, very much. Again, I don't remember if it's exactly the wording of the Gemara, Shinu Makom, Shinu Mazal, it's definitely an idea. The Rambam's attitude to Mazal is something completely different. The Rambam doesn't believe that necessarily the stars are going to control everything. But let's not take Mazal like that. Mazal maybe means here that the choices you make, the environment that you have, the life that you lead. And there's no question, he's bringing this all from Gemaras. Okay. Nothing here is coming from him. It's coming from his analysis of the sources. The frustrating and challenging thing about the Rambam is he never brings any sources. He quotes from the Pesukim, but he never brings from the sources in rabbinic literature that he's drawing from. Now, it's if you know rabbinic literature, it's usually very easy to trace them. And if you take a Rambam, not like this, but with all the commentaries around it, that's what all the commentaries are doing. They're saying, he got that from here, and he got this from here. Every now and then, he comes up with a new idea, and he always says, V'nira li, and I think. And then you know it's his idea. Okay? Fine. Now, let's go on. Zayin. Chetz. Everyone with me? Even though crying out and doing tshuva is always effective, in the 10 days of repentance between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, it's even more effective. And it's much more likely to be received. Shnei Mari brings a very important pasuk. Look for God where he can be found. Kra'uhu, cry out to him when he is close. And of course, the Meforshim say, when is God any closer than any other time? It's when you are more attuned to connect with God during these 10 special days. But that's for an individual. But for a community, whenever a community turns to tshuva, they're immediately answered. So a community doesn't need those 10 days, but you and I as an individual, those 10 days are like a power boost. Yeah? These are the 10 days to really do it. Okay? Now, Tet. Yom HaKippurim, Yom Kippur itself, who's man tshuva lakol? That is like a bargain basement sale. This is a time of tshuva for everybody. There's tshuva really going then. Liyachid for individuals, lirabim for the public, for who kates mechilu aslichal Yisrael. This is the apex of all of this process of forgiveness for the Jewish people. The fikach, therefore, chayavim hakol la'asoyis tshuva li'alizvados for Yom HaKippurim. Therefore, even if your heart's not in it, you have to make an effort on Yom Kippur. Everybody makes an effort on Yom Kippur. You should be making some effort on Yom Kippur. And we take this so seriously, we start already Erev Yom Kippur, Kodim Shiochal. Remember, we do Vidui in davening before you eat, before the fast, in Mincha, there's a vidui. The Gemara says, and he brings here, Shema Yichanek, Besudak, Kodim Shidvari, God forbid a person might choke on that meal and die and didn't do tshuva, and they, and now they've already done it. Even though you did shuv already before you ate, before Yom Kippur, you do shuv again in Maariv, you do shuv again, or you do vidui, I should say, again in the Shemona Esrei in Shacharis, Uba Musaf and in Musaf, Uba Mincha and in Mincha, and in Me'ila and in Me'ila. And in fact, it's a double vidui. Why? Because if you remember Yom Kippur Machzor, or if you're going through it right now, you'll know that you do vidui in your own private Shemona Esrei at the end. After the last bracha, you do that as a whole, taking the vidui with that sham nebayol and that. And again, your words. You can say whatever you like at that point, you know, in any language you want, in any framing you want. And then again, when the chazan goes to chazaras hashatz and repeats the amida, we do it all again together with the chazan. Okay, so we do it privately, we do it publicly. So we do it like 9 times, I think, over, no, 10, 11 times, I think, over the course of Yom Kippur. Fine. And don't forget, the meal before Yom Kippur is the Suda of Yom Kippur. I mean, this is a festive meal, you have challah, mehamotzi, etc., etc. So it's not just eating so you won't be hungry on Yom Kippur. It itself is a Sudas Yom Tov, this meal before Yom Kippur. Fine. Yud. Havidu shenaga bo kol Yisrael, the vidui that we say is aval chatanu, we've sinned, etc. But who ika havidu? Aver shiizvari aleim yom kippur zeh, and even things which you did vidui for this Yom Kippur, Choza Misvani Alehim Yom Kippurim Acher. You can do vidui again in the future, and I'm going to draw you a chart on the board in a minute, which is going to help with this as well. The Afal Pishu Omit Tshuva. So even though you're still holding by that, you still have to keep yourself strong, and you accept and you say how that change has made a difference to you. Fine. Maybe I'll draw this on the board now. I think this is actually quite helpful, which is what you're trying to do on Yom Kippur. This whole process. Okay, is you've got if you like two lines here. Okay, this is the line of achievement, and this is the line of potential. Okay, and on this axis is your age, from 12 to 120, and on this axis there's your level. Okay, that you've got to. So where you're holding right now, let's say you're here. There are three different kind of things that you're dealing with. There's this stuff here, which is already achieved. You're already achieving this, okay? You're already doing this. So this is great, this is check, you're doing this. You don't have to do vidui and tshuva on this because this is already part of your achievements. And you can, on the contrary, you can say, you know, I used to not be able, if you think about it, if you're there, when you were this age, you were not there yet, it was still in this area here. So you can say, okay, I did that, I've done that, I've achieved that, I'm doing this well, Baruch Hashem, thank God, hope that continues. This area here, let's just do this dotted, this area here is above the level of your potential right now. Yeah? Meaning in 30 years, here will be within your level of potential, nachon? But right now it's not. So what can you do here? You can't turn around and say, I'm never going to do that again, because you know you're going to do that again. For example, the Gemara says, and the Halacha says, that every time you say a bracha, you have to have certain kavanos with the Shem Hashem, the Shem Elokeinu, Shem Yudkei Vavkei. Like, are you doing that in every bracha? Am I doing that in every bracha? No, we should be. But maybe you'll turn around and say, look, I don't even remember always to say a bracha. Forget about having all the right kavanos. The kavanos are going to have to wait until I'm holding that. Here's an example. So what you're doing with this area is you're saying, I can't do this now, but I have a plan. I have a, what is it, a wicked plan, what are they saying? I have a something plan. I have a plan that I'm going to do that. Meaning, right here, right now, I can't do that. But by the time I'm 30, 35, 40, whatever, I'm going to put in place learning that I'm going to try and focus on, and I'm going to be in a place where I can do that. That's enough already. That's enough to have a plan. That's all you can do right now. You can't actually fix it right now. This is where the main work should be. Because this is the line between your achievement, what you can achieve, what you have achieved, I should say, and what you're capable of achieving. That's what you have to identify. This area here, which is the difference between where you are and where you could be right now. Not what you already did, shkayach, that's great. Not what you're not capable of doing, because that's all you can do there is have a, you know, a sensible plan as where you're going, how you're going to get there. You don't have to do everything today. This is where it's all happening. You'd have to identify what that is. I don't know where that line is. You need to think where that line is. What am I doing? What could I be doing? And that's really what he's talking about here. Okay, fine. Let's talk a little bit about Bein Adam L'Chaveru. Yud Aleph. Ein HaTshuva Lo Yom HaKippurim Mechaprim El HaAveru Shebein Adam L'Mokam. All of this tshuva and this change and this resolution and this being a new person is only going to work between you and God. Kagoin Misha Achav Dava Asa, you ate trey. Or Baal Be'il Asura, or you had a sexual relationship with someone you shouldn't have done. Ukiyotze Behem. Okay, fine. A consensual sexual relationship, obviously, because it was just between you and God that you did this wrong. Aval Averu Shebein Adam L'Chaveru, but when you insult or hurt another person, Kagon Choyvel Chaveru, you wounded them, let's say physically. Or Mekaleles Chaveru, you cursed them. Or Gozlo, or you stole from them, you borrowed their things, you didn't tell them whatever, Kiyotze Behem. Eino Nimchol Ale Olam, you will not get any Mechila. Until you pay back the person, the Yiratzehu, and you appease them. You have to try and make the shalom between you and the other person. And then even if you gave them the money back, and they say, fine, thank you, you still have to try and get them to forgive you, which is not easy. Even if you only just spoke insultingly about them, you have to appease them, you have to speak to them until they forgive you. It was an interesting debate when the Chofetz Chaim brought out the Sefer Chofetz Chaim. So it was all about Lashon Hara. I'm sure you know that. The Sefer Shmiras HaLashon and the Sefer Chofetz Chaim. So he sent it to Rav Yisrael Salanter, who was one of the main Rabbonim, one of the leaders of the Muslim movement, founders of the Muslim movement, for a Haskamah, for a letter of approval. So Rav Yisrael Salanter sent it back and said, I'm not writing you a letter. He said, why? Don't you like the book? He goes, no, the book's fantastic. He says, but why won't you write me a letter? He says, because I disagree with one halacha in the book that you said. I don't agree with you. He said, what do you disagree with? So the Chofetz Chaim writes that if you spoke Lashon Hara about somebody, but they don't know, and they didn't suffer, then you still have to go up to them, say to them, I'm really sorry, but I've been speaking Lashon Hara about you, and I'm really sorry I did that, please forgive me. Whereas Rav Yisrael Salanter says, what is the purpose of that whole exercise? They don't know, they didn't suffer. Meaning, if they know somebody's saying bad things about them and they didn't get a job because, well, I heard, so then, obviously, then they know that something's going on. But if they never suffered and they don't know, and they're totally happy, and you just walk up to them and say, I've been speaking Lashon Hara about you the whole year, then what did you achieve? You just made people unhappy to make them happy again? So Rav Yisrael Salanter says, no, I don't agree with the halacha. So the Chofetz Chaim says, so just write in your haskama, I agree with everything in your book, but I don't agree with the halacha. So he said, people never read the words, they just see the name on the top and they assume that I agree with everything. Yeah? I actually had this little experience myself. Once somebody sent me a book about an area that I'm been involved in a little bit, Sneer's kind of area, and I really didn't like the book. And he asked me to write a blurb on the cover of the book. And I said, I really don't feel comfortable writing a blurb on the cover of the book. He says, I don't care if you write on the blurb. I don't like this book. I think it's wrong. I said, no, I'm not even going to write that. Because if I put my name on the book, there's a blurb on the book. Even though the blurb says, you know, I don't like the book. So I didn't write the blurb. Anyway,
so
fine.
So they can edit it. They can do like, wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Who knows where it's going to go. Anyway, so he says, you have to try and get someone to forgive you. Yud Gimel, bottom of the page. Lo ratza chaveru limchola. What if they don't want to forgive you? Okay. Maybe lo shurashib l'shloshib ben adam. You have to bring friends. Mireyev, you have to bring your friends with them. Hupogim boim avakshim imenu. And then you have to ask him with your friends. Says, look, I really am asking for forgiveness. I really genuinely am asking. Lo nitzratza lehem. If he doesn't want to forgive them, maybe lo shnaim or shlishi, or shlishi, shni or shlishit. You try once, twice, three times. Lo ratza, if they still won't forgive you, menicha v'holekla, then you can leave them. It's not your problem anymore. The one who won't forgive, he's the one who is now the sinner, as it were, because he should be forgiving you. And if it's your Rav, even a thousand times. Now, what's going on here? There are issues that if you know that when you bring it up with the other person, it's just going to reopen the whole wound and make it worse again. Mm-hmm. This is not magic, you know? We're not saying that you have to be Yotzer. I've got to do my thing to do tshuva, so I'm going to go up to you and say, please forgive me for what I did to you. If you know that that is going to trigger them in a way that it's going to upset them even more, then of course you can't do that. Because then you're trying to get like your own absolution off the back of upsetting them all over again. So you have to think it through. But if you think there's a genuine opportunity that if you are genuinely remorseful and you speak to the person and they understand that you're trying the best, they'll say, okay, you know, whatever, you're right, it was terrible and I really was upset, but okay, you know, whatever, let's move forward, I forgive you. It can happen, you know, people do that. So you have to think of how if it's going to work. If it could work, then you should think of how you're going to try it, because bringing shalom between other people is fundamental, and you can't do tshuva bein adam lemakom until you've done tshuva bein adam lechavero. Yes.
So what about a situation where, like, this is all well and good in matter of theory, theoretical?
Correct, but it's never theoretical, it's all practical,
but
yeah.
What about the situations where the person, like, it is likely to just, like, keep going back and forth and be messy, and you know there's a part of you that's like, really want to apologize, and like, they're wrong, you're wrong. What do you do in that?
You have to ask somebody who understands you and understands them, just first of all, what they think is the best bein adam lechaveiro, not halacha, but just in terms of the personalities. First, you have to get a good assessment as to whether it's going to help, whether it's going to hurt, whether you really mean it, whether you don't really mean it, whether you're just doing it to be, you know, follow a halacha, but you know, your heart's not really in it. How are they going to react? That's not a question a rabbi can answer. It's a question a friend can answer, maybe, or a relative can answer, or someone can answer, someone that you trust, yeah?
And it's not lashon hara.
No. That's l'to'elet. Absolutely, that's l'to'elet. You're saying something that happened in order for you to be able to get a proper sack and to be able to get a proper understanding of what's going on, 100%. And then maybe you have to ask a shaila, is this something I need to do, or is this not didn't need to do, who's really right here? Meaning if you were in the right all along, you know, why are you going to ask them for forgiveness? On the other hand, you might turn around and say, well, if that's the only way we can mend it, then fine, I'll just say I was wrong and it's not a problem, as long as that's okay for you, because that might cause you resentment. It's very, very, very complicated. All the Rambam can ever do with these kind of halachas is lay out a framework, and you have to work out how it works in your framework. This is actually very important, and maybe I'll just finish with this. I'll take a question from Rafael in a second. Whenever you're dealing with bein adam lechaveiro halacha, like this, you're always dealing with something called mishpatim and not chukim. What's the difference? Chukim are laws which are like ritual laws that just apply. It's like, just this is how it works. It's like baked in. It's fixed. Like if you drop milk in your chicken soup, you ask for shaila, they ask you how much did you drop in, and you say, you know, a 50th, and they say, okay, that's no good. Or you say a 30th, whatever. And if you turn around to the rabbi and say, I don't know, this whole 60th kind of thing doesn't really speak to us anymore. It's very medieval. It's like, you know, we today we're really into a 20th. The rabbi's going to say to you, like, I don't care what you're into. This is how it works. If you jump off a cliff and say, I don't believe in gravity, then gravity believes in you. Okay? It's just baked in. Shabbos is like that. Kashrus is like that. These are chukim. Chukim means it's fixed. Yeah? Chikui in modern Hebrew means engraving. It's fixed. You can't rub it out. But whenever you go to Bein Adam Lechaveiro, when you're dealing with parents, when you're dealing with spouse or marriage or relationships, everything you're reading is always guidelines that you have to apply as mishpatim. Mishpatim, says the Maharal, need a lot of seichel, need a lot of common sense, a lot of asking people, is this going to be right? Is this going to be right? Thinking it through. You can't just follow a halachic system. There's a very extreme example, a true story of a guy who his parents thought he was nuts because he became frum. He was in one of these like Baal Tshuva yeshivas. He was what they call FFT, yeah, from Tuesday, yeah. Like Monday is not from Tuesday. It's the whole works. His parents think he's nuts. His parents' relationship with his parents is strained. And he speaks to the Rosh Hashiva, what should I do? The Rosh Hashiva says, oh, kibud av ha'eim, kibud av ha'eim. It's a very important mitzvah. So he goes and reads and he learns kibud av ha'eim. And he learns in a book that you have to speak to your parents respectfully. And that means in the third person, because that's the most respectful way.
Oh,
it's a true story. So he goes home to his parents living in Staten Island or wherever they are. And he says to them, would mother like to sit down? Would father like a cup of coffee? And his parents just like... You're a complete moron. He goes running back to the Rosh Hashiva. I spoke to this Rosh Hashiva and asked him, what did I do wrong? He said, you got to learn Kibbutz Av Ha'eim, but not like Chukim. It's not Hilchos Shabbos. You don't just read it and then do what it says. You read it and then think, who are my parents? How do they need to be respected? How does that work in my... You've got to have a lot of seichel for this. So again, whenever he brings in these general principles, I'm not really helping you because I don't know. Every case is completely different. Variables. You have to think it through. Take these as guiding principles. understand that even though it's difficult to go to someone and say, I'm sorry, if it is going to help, so suck it up. It's what's needed, and you can really repair relationships. If it's not going to, okay, so then that's different, but you have to work it out. Rafaeli, you had a quick question?
No, but I can ask you after class.
Okay, fine. Let's speak after class. Thank you, ladies. We'll see you on Sunday. Teal on Sunday morning. Okay? 8:45 at Kiryat Moshe, please.